Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and I want to welcome you to Blog Talk Radio Backyard Labrish. We're here each week on a Wednesday at 8 o'clock where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And I want to thank all of my loyal fans for calling in and sharing the evening with me. And for new fans and new visitors to our show, I'd like to give you a little, some idea of what a Labrish is and the mood we try to ignite just for a short while on a Wednesday here in the backyard. And for those of us who have experienced Jamaica by being born there or growing up there or visiting there, we know how relaxed and laid back the island can be, the whole island, even the people, the climate, the beauty, everything can just really be a tranquilizer. So when we come to the backyard, we have a virtual trip to Jamaica, and we can pretend we are in our favorite chair, in our favorite part of the island. If you're a visitor, it could be on the beach or in your hotel room overlooking the ocean. If you're a native like me, then you remember perhaps just being in the backyard or on the roof, as they had the, where you could go up on the roof in the days when I was young, which was a long time ago, and you could just relax and feel the trade winds blow gently across your face. So that's what we want to do. We want to take a virtual trip. So whatever way you need to picture yourself, I'm asking you to just do that. And we forget about all our problems and what's happening in different parts of the world. Because when you're there on vacation, or for a lot of people who live there, you're really not that hung up. Once the day ends and you're home or at your favorite place, you just sort of chill. And you are relaxing with a bunch of friends, and you're all talking about something that you have an interest in. So that's what a Labrish is, and that's what we're going to do. And tonight, I am happy to say that keeping in line with our diverse culture, a lot of people, even Jamaicans, do not know the origin of how we became such a diverse society, the origin of when and who came when. So through the courtesy or the passion of some of our historians, and tonight it would be Dr. Rebecca Tortello, who contributed to pieces of the past, some wonderful historical articles, and I encourage you to go check it out if you want to know when all the different nationalities arrived to make the beautiful melting pot that are known all over the world to be just Jamaicans. So we're all mixed up, a little of this, a little of that. So tonight, because it's the new year for our Chinese heritage, I am going to be giving a little information, some information, and I would love to have some participation from the people on the board as to what they remember about this particular, the Chinese, in their community or in their school, or who are their friends that might be have stronger. I mean, we're also mixed up that we some of us don't even know what we have. And after I read you some information and we elaborate a little, I'm going to tell you all the different people, some of the people that I'm sure you might know that you did not know had a little Chinese in them. And I'm here in the backyard, we're very casual. We're not really politically correct. So I always put in my sidebars and tell what I think that something means, that I'm certainly not an expert. And because it's a relaxed conversation, I invite you to join me and just put in your two cents. So reading from Dr. Tortella's article in Pieces of the Past, I will tell you what it says here, the beginnings. The story of the Chinese in Jamaica is linked to Panama and railways. In the mid-19th century, many Chinese looked west to California, answering the call of the gold rush, and to Panama, where laborers were required for the building of a railroad from Panama City to Colon. Both options promised improvement in their lives and those of their children, and led many Chinese to break the law and leave China prior to 1891, the year the Chinese government officially allowed immigration. The first large group of 267 Chinese immigrants came from Hong Kong on July 30th, 1854, just months before those from Panama on a ship called Epsom. They were destined for indentureship. Later that year, 205 Chinese workers demanded to leave Panama, fearing yellow fever. They arrived in Jamaica on November 1st on 18 ships, and they have the name of the ships. 195 on one ship and 10 different ones on different ships, respectively. Now, Panamanian authorities sent them to nearby Jamaica solely. They demanded to leave Panama because of the fear of the yellow fever. That's my sidebar. And they sent some of them to Jamaica, to the Kingston Hospital, where some of them died. Now, less than 50 immigrants survived that first set who came. Of these, one, Robert Jackson Chin, and here they have in parenthesis, Chin Pak Kong, PA-KUNG. He opened a wholesale house on downtown Kingston's Pigeon Street, where the Dennis and Geddes building now stands. In doing so, he unknowingly paved the way for many of his countrymen. Two others, Chang Sai Pang and Lin Sam, opened grocery stores nearby. All three men provided guidance to successive batches of immigrants. Now, that's the first paragraph, or not paragraph, you know what I mean. First part of the article, the beginnings. I am just wondering, as I always wonder, how many people of Chinese descent that really know this? Because I was really, really intrigued when I read this article to know that it was more or less one person or three of these that really paved the way for so many others to come that came after them. So that was the very beginning. They got there because they actually wanted to get out of Panama in the first place. They were lucky in those days to get out of China because it was illegal. You couldn't migrate. So they were sort of the first batch that decided to leave because they were going to work. They were trying to better themselves. That happened, you know, in a lot of different races. They would move from where they were born and raised, like a lot of Jamaicans do now and continue to do, did long ago and continue to do now, and go to another country where they think they could have a better life. So that's how it all started in terms of the Chinese. Now, it went on to say, and here again, during the break, my little sidebar, or any other time, our callers on the board are welcome to raise their hand by hitting 1 on your telephone, and that will tell me that you want to join the Labrish. So feel free to do so. So let me tell you now when more of them started to arrive. A decade later, in the 1860s, another set of Chinese arrived from Trinidad and British Guyana. They had worked as indentured laborers in the cane fields until hurricane and insects threatened their job security. Some 200 Chinese workers answered a call for three-year contract laborers in Jamaica to tend to the American-led large-scale planting of coconuts, bananas, and sugar. When their three-year contracts were up, some continued in the fields, even though they were not welcome with open arms by the newly emancipated slaves, who saw them as competition. Others started small shops of their own, where total weekly sales tended to amount to less than 8 pounds on average. By this time, Chinese grocers were becoming known for extending credit to favored customers, selling by barter, providing round-the-clock service, and selling goods in small, affordable quantities. It is as a result of their important activities that items such as rice, no, they're importation activities. That items such as rice, saltfish, salt meats, flour, and cornmeal became staple of the Jamaican diets. Now, ain't that something? Because it certainly was, most of these items certainly became a staple. It's what that's, you know, if we didn't have the saltfish, our national dish would not be saltfish and ackies. So all of Jamaica really owe it to the Chinese, because it's because they had started to import these things. It doesn't say in the article where the things were coming from. It only said that they imported it. Isn't that something? And they had round-the-clock service of selling these goods in small quantities. Because if we try to, you know, go back then, the slaves that were newly emancipated didn't have a lot of money. And so, but they could barter other things because they grew things. The Chinese imported things and the other people grew things so they could barter. Oh, I mean, this is so exciting to me to learn all of this. And again, call us on the board. Feel free to raise your hands. I always feel so lonesome when I'm all here reading by myself and I am going off. I mean, I'm reading this. Some of this, you know, I don't read thoroughly before I come on the air because there is so much that I read when I'm researching. And I'm selecting something to that hopefully my backyard friends will be as interested in as I am, but I'm like a little kid in a candy store. So bear with me as I go on further, and feel free to join. Now, the next paragraph says, a community grows. We're taking it step by step now. We know why they arrived. We know what happened in between and how they got started. As I am just thinking that somehow they had access to import these things. It perhaps came from China. I don't know. And when I know how I grew up on Tiger Balm, and, you know, I grew up long ago, and Tiger Balm is just becoming known in America. I know that something was going on our island that a lot of people didn't know about, because we have been using Tiger Balm. I think my great-grandmother perhaps did. So perhaps we owe that to the Chinese too. Anyway, a community grows. In the 1860s, a close-knit Jamaican Chinese community began to emerge, with many living above, behind, or somewhere near to their shops. Downtown, a retail area became known as Chinatown. Now, Kingstonians really know that place. Two decades later, in the 1880s, another group of 680 immigrants arrived, this time directly from China. They had been recruited as farm workers. There were 501 men and 105 women. Ooh, that's out of balance. 54 boys and 17 girls who docked in Kingston Harbor in 1884, after having survived a typhoon aboard the 67-day voyage. Upon arrival, they were claimed by the plantation owners, who held their contracts, and they were scattered across the island. Among this group was Chin Tong Khoi, K-O-A, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, who in 1891 would found the Chinese Benevolent Society, to offer humanitarian and social aid, as well as protect Chinese customs and preserve their ethnic identity at 131 Barry Street in downtown Kingston. Well, I really get so much inspiration when I read articles like this, whether it's about, you know, people we are all a part of or a foreigner who did something while they were there. Because what I'm hearing here, and that this is how it applies to now and hopefully the next generation or younger people that might come by and listen to the show. A lot of times, if you have an idea or a passion and you think it's something even personal or just something you want to do, you can make such a difference in other people's lives. Because in the first part of the article, it stated how these three people were actually, call it the trailblazers of their time. First of all, they got out to China. Then they got out to where they were afraid that it was risky for their health. And here we have one man who started an organization that I am happy to tell you I did go online and find out that this particular benevolent association or society, I'm sorry, the Chinese Benevolent Society is still alive and well in Jamaica. And as a matter of fact, when I looked at the article last night, they had just elected a new board. And a picture, if you wish to go and check it out, of the board was posted online. So I just find that very inspiring. You know, one person can make a big difference in the entire world. So, okay, so let me get back to the article here. Do I have any hands? Remember, we want to join the Labrish. Okay, following 1885, large-scale immigration of Chinese laborers occurred in an attempt to satisfy the demand for fee labor created by the departure of African Jamaicans and East Indian laborers from the plantations. So they, Chinese sort of came after the Africans and the Indians who also came in as indentured servants, was sort of leaving the plantation. Now, I had no clue because when I was growing up, they were primarily shop owners. You know, there was a Chinese shop in almost every neighborhood, and the whole family would be known. And as the article said, usually the family would reside upstairs or to the back or to the side. And all the kids used to be in the shop. And I go back to the days when it was pounds, shillings, and pence, and everything was weighed. We had measures by pints and quarts and Big Jill and Little Jill and whatever. And things were wrapped a special way. We didn't have paper bags, and we didn't have plastic bags like you have now. And I know this is going to be strange to the modern Jamaicans who perhaps never seen any of these things, especially those in Kingston. But when you went to the shop, you didn't get sugar in a box or in a plastic bag. It was weighed, wrapped, and there was a cute way of wrapping it. I remember seeing them do it. And any quarters on the board can relate to what I'm saying, can put up their hands and let's talk about it. So I don't know about you all, but I just find this very fascinating. And there's a similar story. I sort of did a story, the people who came, a show, perhaps, when I just started the first year, which was 2 years ago. And I just gave the dates of the different ethnic groups that came to Jamaica to make the melting pot, but not the details. But I really find the details very, very interesting. So the next paragraph is labeled, or the title of it is Facing Challenges. In 1888, more than 800 additional Chinese arrived, and the Jamaican business community began to get nervous, fearful that they would lose control of the retail gross trade. They lobbied the Jamaican government to impose the first in a set of immigration laws that would make it more difficult for Chinese immigrants to come to the island. Now, how many Jamaicans know that? How many Chinese people know that? The new restrictions went into effect in 1905. Immigrants were now required to register with the authorities and provide a guarantee for a reliable, from a reliable person as to the soundness of their character. Ain't that something? In 1910, new and even harsher conditions were added. Chinese immigrants arriving subsequently to that date had to pay a 30-pound deposit upon landing and also pass a physical and a test showing that they could write and speak 50 words in 3 different languages. Now, I'm sure that most people didn't know that. They had to take a test. I suppose similar to what a foreigner would have to take a test here if they want to become an American citizen. So it was actually required for them to have a sponsor, and they had to pass a test, and they had to be able to speak 3 different languages. Ain't that something? This law made it more difficult, but not impossible, for already settled Chinese Jamaicans to send for their relatives. By the mid-1920s, the total number of Chinese who immigrated to Jamaica numbered close to 4,000. By 1930, an additional 2,000 Chinese had arrived. In 1931, however, the Jamaican government issued a decree that no passport was to be issued to Chinese coming to Jamaica excepting to those under 14 years old who were allowed student permits. This was largely a result of ill will towards the Chinese who had by this time branched out into laundries, restaurants and bakeries, in addition to retail groceries. They were doing well on the island, contributing to national development while providing for the families. In the 1930s, during the labor riots, not surprisingly, many Chinese groceries were looted and robbed, and in some cases, their owners murdered. This decree stood until 1947, when the Chinese consulate, established in the 1920s and largely supported by the Jamaican Chinese community in Kingston, succeeded in persuading the Jamaican government to relax these restrictions, remove the quota system that had been placed on wives and children and parents, and allow Chinese immigrants to send for their family members. That was a shock to me. So what we're hearing here, there's discrimination at every level. I mean, a lot of times when we think of the word or we read stories, we always seem to think of black and white, because of course that is the larger picture. But discrimination is just, I think, when one group of people fear something about another group of people, and the one group has more power than the other group, that they can make rules or laws that would put that other group in a minority position, that they have restrictions. And if you really think of it, in almost every society, during almost every period, there's always some type of discrimination going on. So back, I'm looking for a hand to be raised on the board. So back to the article. I see nobody's hanging up, so I guess you're all enjoying the story. Okay, back to Dr. Tortello. By this time in the 1940s, many of the second generation, those who were truly Jamaican Chinese, began to rebel against their parents. Desires to remain wedded to Chinese culture. That's what they were rebelling against. They left the family business, went into other professions, and embraced aspects of Jamaican culture. Many also converted to Roman, became Roman Catholics. Resentment from most notable examples, Resentment from Afro-Jamaicans waned as tolerance of aspects of Chinese culture grew and some amalgamations occurred. Many of the most notable examples is the number game, Drapan. Drapan in Cantonese is Jaffa, J-I-H-F-A-H. The Hakka Sufa is named for the fact that tickets numbered 1 to 36 are dropped in a pan to see who wins. Many players pay based on dreams, although some play by odds based on a study of the pattern of play. Drapan is said to have arrived in Jamaica with the earliest Chinese immigrants in the 1950s. It was restricted by the government as early as 1898. This law was amended in the 1920s due to the game's substantial popularity. Today, Drapan's meanings are most likely both Chinese and Afro-Jamaican in origin. According to Barry Chivenes in a Jamaican journal, articles on Drapan, the number 7 means married woman and hog. In Chinese customs, a son-in-law makes a gift of a pig or pork to his mother-in-law every New Year. The number 11 means baby boy and dog. Among the Chinese, the dog is a blessing as a newborn male, and it gives you different. She's quoting from this book that was written by Barry. His name is spelled C-H-E-V-A-N-N-E-S, and the book is The Jamaican Journal. And it refers to what all the Drapan numbers mean in Jamaican and what it means in the Chinese culture. So I figure for the people who like to discover, that must be a very interesting book. But I happen to remember my father buying Drapan and Pick-a-Pow. Now, I haven't come to the Pick-a-Pow part yet, but I'm wondering if any of the callers on the board have a drop. I didn't even know. I thought I always call it Japan, but it's really drop, D-R-O-P, pan. And how many people knew that? Because to me, it was Drapan. And I I didn't know it was drop pan. But I suppose because we're not Chinese, number one, and it's a little patois mixed up in how the word is spelt and how it's pronounced. But I never knew, I think I spoke to someone about this article and they did tell me at that time that it was drop pan. But I did not know that number one, so how the game went really is number 1 to 36 individual numbers were dropped in a pan, and I suppose whichever one landed on top was the winner. So when you buy a drop pan ticket, you were actually buying a number, but the number meant something in the Chinese culture and always also in the Jamaican culture. So I am reading again because nobody's putting up their hand. Despite some Jamaicanization, the Chinese who also worked hard to maintain the links to their culture. Writers like Anglican priest Easton Lee, and I'm sure some of the George's Old Boys or so might know that person, explored their Chinese Jamaican roots in poetry. And so they're writers. They have people who write about their culture. Now, restaurants continue to offer dip sun, the traditional Chinese Sunday brunch, and many supermarkets sell traditional Chinese cooking ingredients. The Chinese Benevolent Society has 5 subsidiary organizations: the Chinese Public School, the Chinese Sanitarium, the Chinese Alms House, the Chinese Public News, and the Chinese Cemetery on Hearts East Ashby Road. Not familiar with that. The Miss Jamaica Chinese Beauty Pageant is no longer held, but many Jamaican beauties of Chinese descent have entered and done well in the Miss Jamaica Beauty Contest. Winners include Shelley Chung and Patsy Yang. Chinese holidays such as Chinese New Year and the Moon and Boat Festivals, as well as the anniversary of the founding of the People's Republic of China, are still celebrated in style, if less extravagantly than earlier in the 20th century, when they often included dinners and fireworks. Chinese Jamaicans have also made their mark in the political arena, with prime ministers, PMs such as Rose Leon, Ferdinand Yap Sam, and Delroy Chuck. Similarly, Chinese Jamaican impact on the business world is far-reaching, with families and individuals controlling substantial restaurants, bakeries, and supermarket chains such as Island Grill, Purity, and Superfoods, as well as banks such as NCB. Next year, to celebrate the 150th anniversary of the Chinese arrival in Jamaica, Patrick Lee is publishing his new book, which I suppose is gone already, Jamaican Chinese Worldwide, One Family, which will include families from Jamaica, USA, Canada, and Britain. So with that said, as it mentioned here, you know, once the close-knit family that originally came together and stayed together produced children in Jamaica, and the children started to revolt, they were intermarrying into the other cultures. They were marrying Indians, people from Australia, people from all the different countries of Europe, and also people from Africa. So there you can see how the pot starts to get, you know, sort of churned up. And a lot of people have a little Chinese in them, because I made Wikipedia had an article that was similar to Dr. Tortella's, but it went further in giving some people of Chinese heritage who perhaps didn't look very Chinese. And I know that there were several blogs that I saw that referred to people, foreigners, who would see a Chinese person, and then when they would hear them speak, they would be speaking purely Jamaican, or they could tell that they were not speaking like a Chinese person. And I'm sure that a lot of the present-day people who might even look like Chinese, they're Chinese Jamaican, don't speak any Mandarin or whatever the other languages their parents spoke generations ago, because they call themselves one thing, and that is Jamaican. Whether they look very Chinese, a little bit of Chinese, or whatever way most cultures look, they call themselves Jamaican. So it really celebrates the fact of the motto that says, out of many, one people, and that person is a Jamaican, no matter how they look. Very fair, blonde hair, one blue eye, one green eye, kinky hair, fair, with the same, oh, it's so beautiful. And with that said, I'm opening up the board, so someone put up your hand, because I have a list of people here who perhaps don't look Chinese, but according to this article, they got a little bit. Some people have Chinese name and don't look anything like a Chinese. You wouldn't even know they're married to one or have their grandparents, the name came down. So it's really very interesting. And tonight we're just covering in details how the Chinese arrived to mix up the pot. But for the rest of the month, if our fans would like, we will be doing some other ethnic groups that are all part of the diversity of being a Jamaican. So with that said, I see 718-375 on the board. Would you like to join the Labrish? Also 973-373 and 301-534. We have 404-974-278-595. So come on, peoples. I need some feedback. And while you make up your mind whether you're going to join this Labrish or just sit in your easy chair and enjoy the trade winds blowing across your face, I hope you have your favorite drink in your hand, and I hope you're not asleep. I hope you didn't sip too much on that cocktail, whatever it is, mixed with coconut water, that you're not asleep, because, I mean, I want you to talk to me. So until I get someone to talk, I'm going to tell you some of the people that's on this list, because some of it floored me. But it's a great list because it tells you a little bit about how diverse the culture is and all the different areas of the industry and art and thing that some of these people are in. There's black. B-L-A-C-K must be the first name, because the last name is C-H-I-N-E-Y. And he's a popular reggae dancehall sound system. Beside it, it just says sound system. Now, I'm not familiar with the modern-day Jamaican culture as I was in the period that I lived in, because I think some of my fans know, but for those who might not know, I left the island as early as 1959, before independence, and I just have some wonderful memories, of course, of the Chinese flavor as I remember it. And I remember, if I can remember well, that there was a Chinese shop almost in every neighborhood, you know, where people could walk to and go get what they needed. And I remember how the Chinese family, there was always a lot of children around. You know, I was young too. So I always remember there that I'm an only child. I have a lot of cousins, but I was always intrigued because it seemed like they were so many brothers and sisters. You know, they'd be running around the shop, or if they were old enough, they were actually helping their parents to serve you. So I remember that well. And as it mentioned in the article, the people who could buy a pound of something, they would cater to them. And the people who could only buy a quarter pound of something, they would still cater to them. You know, it wasn't prepackaged like it is now, where if you couldn't afford it, you couldn't buy it. You know, you could buy in small portions. And I believe that was because of that service, they were able to just sort of help the people who could not buy in big bulk. Because I am thinking that during the time when they first started to migrate, that the plantation owners, because the planting was still going on, were buying in bulk or perhaps importing their own stuff. And the people who were the newly emancipated people and the indentured laborers didn't have as much money to buy big bulk of stuff. So that community was providing a well-needed service. Now, they perhaps stuck together because it was more comfortable for them. I see 718 with a hand up. I'm trying to get my mouse to open your mics, whoever you are. So just bear with me for a minute. It's not behaving very nicely tonight. So, and I must tell you that my city is experiencing some bad weather. So bear with me. 718-379, your mic is open. Welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret. Welcome to the Labrish.
Yeah, this is Lay from the Bronx.
Hi, Lay from the Bronx. Welcome.
Yeah, you were talking about the Chinese shops in the neighborhoods.
Huh?
Chinese shops in the neighborhoods.
Yes.
And I can remember they also had a bar, which as a youngster, you couldn't go into the bar.
Even had age limits then.
Well, you were restricted as a child to go into the other side of the Chinese shop, the bar.
Now, it's funny because I don't remember the bar. Perhaps.
Well, not
because I wasn't a boy.
Probably not every shop had a bar.
Ah, I see. Your point.
But the other thing I remember is that, you know, when my parents used to send me to the shop to pick up something, I didn't have to pay them any money.
Uh-huh.
And when I bought anything, they had a page on a piece of paper for customers, or I guess certain customers.
Right.
And each time you bought something or some things, they would add it to that list.
Uh-huh.
And they would expect you to pay on the weekend. I suppose you got paid.
Mm-hmm. But do you remember how they used to wrap the things in that little double fold, and then at the end they would make the little peak and tuck it in?
Oh, yes.
Do you remember the wrapping process?
Oh, yeah. And, of course, if you were going to buy, let's say, groceries, you would usually take your own bag or something like that.
Really? I don't remember that.
My grandmother used to
put all the other packages in.
Yes, yeah. My grandmother used to have her little shopping bag, and she would they would put put all of the things that you wanted in it.
So would you take a list or would you remember it?
Well, usually, you know, you would get a list unless you're buying one or two items that you can remember. But
right.
Normally you would take a list of, you know, you make up a grocery list.
I think I remember somebody mentioned or reading somewhere where, you know, the children would make up little songs. I think I heard somebody tell me there was a song that you would make up to remember what you're supposed to buy when you get to the shop.
I suppose.
Yeah. And if any of the callers on the board can relate to any of this, please put up your hand and share your story.
Well, if you can't remember, I guess you have to utilize some method of that would make you remember things.
Right.
Yeah.
But do you know who's on this list? Naomi Campbell.
I
really noticed that she had high cheekbones, have a little look. They have her listed here as a British model and actress.
Yeah, that's a stretch. I once read something about her, and I didn't see any Chinese ancestry in our bio.
But I must say that I've noticed that she has exceptionally high cheekbones.
Well, she's
sort of a flattish face.
Yes, she has a model's face.
Right, but what I mean is an unusual. I could once I saw that, it made sense to me that she could have a little Chinese in her.
That's possible.
And it doesn't always show up in the shade that you are, but sometimes it shows up in the bone structure because the bone structure is a little different. Now, I thought that most everybody knows that name. But, you know, they have a lot of Chinese name here in different industries and a lot in reggae. There's a Phil Chen, who's a famous reggae musician. I am not familiar, you know, with, you know, we left before reggae. So it was, they might work behind the scenes in production and things like that. But, I mean, it just runs the gamut. Were you familiar with the poet that Dr. Tortella spoke about?
No.
Oh, well, I forgot the name in the article.
Point is that
But there is a Chin. The first name is spelled Staccyann, and the last name is Chin, and he's a spoken word poet.
Well, you know, you would expect that Jamaican Chinese would be in almost every strata of Jamaican life. And,
right. Fashion photographer, artist.
Yeah.
Soccer player. Dustin Chung is a soccer player, and Mike Chung is also a soccer player.
Yeah. Well, you see, their parents and grandparents were, you wouldn't expect them to be as in everything as the children, second and third generation children would be, because the original Chinese indentured servants that came to Jamaica were hardworking people. And they always believed in having their children experience a better life. And sure enough, I went to school in my school, there were about 23% Chinese in the school.
Mm.
And because the Chinese religion predominantly was Catholic. I said Chinese religion, the religion that the Chinese espoused in Jamaica was not something that brought over from
Right, you know? Right. They became Catholics there.
Like, yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I had a lot of Chinese friends, and to this day, I get calls from my friends that I went to school with.
Right.
So, you know, you look at it from not the fact that they're Chinese, but that they're a good friend, a good Jamaican friend who happens
right. And as it says here, you know, they're just considered Jamaicans.
Yeah.
And they call themselves, most of them will just say they're Jamaicans. Now, did you know that, were you familiar with Patrick Chung, who was involved with the New England Patriots?
I know of him, yes.
Mm. Oh, okay. And they have, I mean, just, as I say, recording artists, reggae dancehall producers, just all over the place, several of them here. And all of them have Chinese names. But I can tell you that a lot of them don't necessarily, you would know, just look at them and say they're Chinese because they're of the intermarrying. Because I know some people who don't look like Chinese that have a Chinese name.
Yes, this is true. And when they took a census in 1943, for instance, the Chinese at that point numbered about 12,394, and
mm-hmm.
they gave a breakdown of born Chinese, as we would call them, and of that total it was only 2,800.
Mm-hmm.
And then of their descendants, there were 4,000 of that number. But
mm-hmm.
then they had a category, Chinese colored, which was even higher than the other two categories, 5,500. So even back in 1943, there were, a very, how you would call it, ingrained in the society at that point.
Right. I think the first generation, like when their parents just came, and they were just had children, they might have stuck within the community, the Chinese, you know, customs and everything at that time. But by the time those grew up and became adults, they were integrating into with the other races.
The word integrating, yes.
The other ethnic groups. But I just want to tell you, there's a long list here. I think that a lot of people might know Naomi Campbell and the football player. I mean, what is the Patriots? Football player. But also listed in the list of billionaires is Mr. Michael Lee Chin, investor and chairman of AICI Limited, and he's listed in Forbes as there are 1,000 billionaires that were listed in Forbes, and he's among them.
Mm-hmm.
I think he lives in Canada now. I think I read about him in Forbes.
Yes,
but
he's
he's
a Canadian, yes.
Yeah,
now,
he became a Canadian, but he was born and raised in Jamaica.
Right, right.
Yeah, so he's a Canadian citizen, like we are Canadian citizens. But, you know, quite likely he was just a Jamaican. Not just a bit Jamaican, because Jamaicans are special. But I meant I don't think he was listed as a Chinese. He's just a Jamaican.
And don't forget Byron Lee, who was credited for bringing
Yeah,
Carnival.
Yeah, why I don't see Baron Lee's name here. I don't know who compiled these names, but yeah. I don't really see his name here.
I had to mention him because he's a classmate of mine.
Right, right. And I'm wondering if these are just listed because they're all alive here. I know he passed away. When did he pass away?
It's a fairly recent list that listed, you know. I got
you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they have some, I mean, it just goes all over. House of Representatives, Speaker of the Jamaican House, Delroy Chuck.
One of the first Chinese senators was also a good friend of mine, Maurice Ten.
Mm-hmm.
He was a contemporary of mine. He went to Princeton. And by the way, he had, when he was at Princeton, he had the record for bearing his chest in cold and snowy weather for the longest period of time.
Ooh.
Yeah.
He must be use a lot of Tiger Balm.
Well, whatever it was, I wanted to tell you the guy who had the previous record, who was
bearing his chest. Is this a contest?
Well, you know, it's
like the people who go out and take the snow dip in that part of the world.
In colleges they have. All sorts of weird things going on.
Right.
Breaking. I am having a senior moment as I'm trying to remember the previous winner, but he was also a very famous movie star that went to Princeton.
Ah.
For bearing his... interesting things.
Yes. Well, as I said, let me remind the listeners that you're listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. We're here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock, where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And the objective of this weekly get-together to Labrish, I'd like to share with the listeners again, is to leave a living legacy about Jamaica. A lot of the information that I'm sharing with you tonight and most times is available online, but I know that a lot of times people don't have time to read it. Some people just don't know about it. And what I consider one of the things that we're doing here in the backyard is bringing some of this information to life, because people can listen and perhaps learn something from it at their convenience. Because of the technology that Blog Talk Radio uses, all of the shows are archived, so you can go and listen to a show that we did last year. I mean, they're all accessible. You can transport them by sending the link. You copy and paste the link, and you can send it to anybody you think may have an interest in that particular subject. Or you can go to backyardlabrish.com and just send an email to say you would like you, yourself, or somebody else to be added to our list, because I do send out a promotion once a week to let our listeners know what subjects we'll be discussing. At the same time, because a Labrish is to get together and talk, I would like to know that we're discussing something that is of interest that you'd like to participate in. So if you have a subject that you think you would like to have discussed or talked about, as long as it celebrates, enlightens, or preserves the rich culture, we would love to hear it. We would also like to interview someone that perhaps lived at a particular part of the island and have memories about the way things were when they lived and grew up there. Because like everything else, I am sure that things have changed. Things are changing all over the world. We live in a time of change. People are communicating differently now than they did in the 30s and 40s. I mean, I think the technology is awesome, but it is also causing a lot of things to change. So leaving some stories about how things were when you were at a place growing up or just experiencing something can be very enlightening to someone that might not know. Because I am sure, Leigh, that there are people living in the parts of Kingston that we grew up in and around that are doing things differently. Some of the things aren't done anymore. Some of the things aren't available anymore. And everything is different.
Sure.
Wouldn't you agree?
Of course.
I mean, there might be some things that might be alike, but I know that there is perhaps dramatic change. You take someone who is born since something new is happening. They won't know about what happened in our times unless somebody tells them.
Right.
So that's what is fueling my passion about sharing and sort of inviting other people to share. And with that said, Leigh, I just want to tell you how much not only I do, but I'm sure a lot of our listeners appreciate you participating as much as you do, because I must tell our listeners that you are a great contributor to all of our discussions or all of our labrish. And I, on behalf of the rest of them, I want to thank you.
Oh, thank you.
So, and with that, I want to encourage our listeners to, if you don't feel you want to participate, but you know of someone who might want to share our story with us about something in particular that happened in their district or the way their life was during the time that they were wherever they grew up in Jamaica, we would love to have them. So just let me know so that we can inform our listeners as to what we're going to be talking about and who we're going to feature. So with that said, we're going to complete our labrish tonight with letting everyone know. I'm sure most people knew that there was a new year ushered in by our Chinese Jamaican society, and China itself and all the Chinese scattered all over the world, and it is the year of the rabbit.
Yeah, you know, I remember when the Chinese would have their new year in Jamaica, and mm-hmm. As we would say, fire racket bus.
Uh-huh. Well, then Dr. Tortella mentions that the celebrations are not as elaborate as they used to be.
Yeah.
Because, but for whatever reason, but they still have celebrations. But I remember that, too. The Chinese New Year's was a special time, and there was all this celebration going on.
Yeah.
So we would look forward to the, you know, the activity and, as you said, the fire racket.
Yeah.
Because we didn't know it as, what did they call it here? I'm having a senior moment.
Well,
as a matter of fact, we used to call it fire clappers. Isn't that what we said?
That clappers or fire
racket. Fireworks and fire clappers, and that was the noise thing that pop up. But did they have fireworks? I can't remember if they had fireworks going up in the sky.
They had different sizes and grades of fireworks
uh-huh.
would include all of them.
Yeah. But we used to call it fire clappers.
Just one other thing that I remember that I quickly would just pass on. A former classmate of mine, his father was the sole distributor in Jamaica. Oh, Henry, you remember that chocolate?
Yes, I remember that. Where did it come from? Where did it originate?
Well, of course, he was a distributor, so he probably had a contact in America to bring...
That is the home of O. Henry?
Yes.
I see.
To Jamaica, you know.
Right.
This guy was a very good friend of mine, and he graduated and went to Boston College after he left St. George's. And I can remember going to Chinatown in Boston with him.
Oh.
Yes. I mean, a lot of my friends would communicate after school. I mean, after graduating and going different places with them. We didn't go into, like, for instance, I go to Boston, I don't go into the restaurant proper, I go into the kitchen.
Mm.
Then a box, and I get my meal, not from the menu, but, you know, something made up.
Right, a little of this and a little of that.
Jamaican style.
Right. And I know I've read on several blogs, Jamaicans that really experience Chinese food, or even foreigners that experience Chinese food in Jamaica, will attest that they cannot get that flavor and taste anywhere else in the world. I remember when I came up here first and went to Chinatown in New York to experience Chinese food, and the menu was different. The things that I was accustomed to on the menu there was not here, and the taste of even some that were the same was totally different. And then I realized that it's because of all the different spices that we have there. So even if they were using the same recipe, possibly because we have different, you know, the flavor, because if there are any cooks online, they'll know what I'm talking about. To me, the onions are not as strong. The scallion is not as strong as what I remembered it to be in Jamaica. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm sure that it's because of all of those herbs, or special herbs and things, that even if they're making the same recipe, it's tasting different.
Yeah, well, you know, from different regions in China, they have different ways of preparing their foods. And the Chinese that originally came to Jamaica cooked in a certain tradition to begin with.
Right.
So,
I think they said most of them were Hakka, H-A-K-K-A. That was the ethnic group of Chinese.
Yes.
That was in the majority at the time.
Right. So, you know, even when you look at a regular Chinese menu, you would find that you would have very spicy or Cantonese, which is usually bland, and so forth and so on. So, but in Jamaica, the taste is totally different. And
totally different.
And in China, since there are so many Jamaicans in China at the present time, you would find that you get very good Chinese food the way we are used to up China.
Right. I understand there's a Cool Runnings restaurant there.
Is there?
Somebody told me
that.
I got an email or something about that.
A Chinese friend of mine who is a doctor, we went to visit, as a matter of fact, we visited a couple of contemporaries, friends of ours, in Princeton. And lo and behold, we went to a Chinese restaurant, and the Chinese fellow that took me there, his uncle was running the place.
Ah.
And
so
we had a great Chinese meal in the tradition of Jamaica.
So it tastes like a Jamaican Chinese dish?
Yeah, right there in Princeton University.
Oh, wow. Do they have a treat? That's
yes.
great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Leigh, thank you so much for contributing to the Labrish. And with that said, I am going to thank the callers on the board for calling in and those calling online. And we hope that you spread the word about our Labrish. We hope that you can continue to come and relax with us in the backyard and just take off from your cares and worries or whatever you do. And just, we don't dance and we don't have dancing music, but hopefully you will just relax and chill and be entertained or enlightened in some way. So we thank you for being here with us. And we ask you to come back soon and stay long. So as we say in Jamaica, what do we always say when people are leaving the house or the garden or the Labrish, the group? What we say, Leigh, do you remember?
No, remind me. I'm sure it's not ciao.
It's walk good.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yes, I remember you saying it. Walk good.
Bye, walk good. Yes. So,
right.
Which for the foreigners who don't, might not know what that implies, is be careful, be safe, as we would say, bye and walk good. And
yeah.
always come back again. Come
yeah.
back soon.
Mm-hmm.
So I will invite you to walk good, come back soon. And as I always say, make it a great week. And be sure to come back to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio next Wednesday at 8 o'clock. So with that said, Leigh, you have to join me in saying where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica.
And we love.
And this is the month of love, so I want to take this opportunity. I don't think I'll be on the air before Valentine's Day, so we have a couple of minutes, and I just want to wish you a wonderful, happy Valentine's Day and to invite you to love yourself first and share the love with those around you. So goodbye, and make it a great week. Good night.
Good night.